gonna talk my wife into it.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you all for coming. I think we'll get started. Tracy told me that Joe McMahon's running a little late, but he'll be joining us shortly. I think we can begin. Tracy, could you take the roll?
Sure, certainly. Chairman McClumba is here, Senator Howard Nolan, Bill Wilmot, Philip Birch, Jeff Canizzo, Jackie Zub from the Department of Agriculture, John Graziano, our Comptroller Jill Lavoisier, and our counsel Kyle Flaherty of Bryan Cave.
Thank you, Tracy. Kyle, you can note the presence of a quorum.
Okay.
And we'll begin with item two, the minutes of the June 6, 2017 board meeting. Jill, you distributed that to everyone, I think, last week. Has everyone had a chance to take a look at the minutes? Does anyone have any proposed amendments or changes that they'd like to suggest, or anything in the minutes they'd like to discuss? Hearing none, I'd take a motion to approve the minutes. Motion by Senator Nolan.
Second.
Seconded by Dr. Wilmot. All in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Number three, consideration of June 2017 year-to-date financials. Jill?
Okay, these financial statements reports were mailed to everybody back on July 18th. What it's basically showing is that as of the end of June, for the first 6 months of the year, right now we're running at a deficit of approximately $345,000. If you look up in the revenues, that pretty much explains the whole story. Our revenues are about $390,000 less than what we had budgeted. As we've talked about in previous board meetings, it's primarily due to the resorts world, and we're hoping that the fourth quarter helps improve that situation. The three awards, Breeder Stallion and Owner Awards, right now we're on, as of the end of June, are about $22,000 under budget, about $57,000 over last year. The other areas, the admin, promo, are pretty much in line to what we had budgeted. You might notice that in the rolling total, the promo is at 6.2%, which is over the cap, but that's mostly due to timing as far as purchase, advertising and purchasing, and that will, you know, we'll be looking at that. The year to date is showing a 5.9, so some of that is estimate. We've gotten some preliminary numbers in for January, and unfortunately,
July,
thank you. And unfortunately, we don't see a whole lot of improvement for the month of July. The revenues were pretty much on line to what we had budgeted, but our awards were about $138,000 more than what we had budgeted. So financial reports for the end of July, the bottom line is gonna look like pretty much a deficit year to date of around $475,000. I still have hopes for that last quarter for the Resorts World revenue, but we've got some, you know, we've got that 10% holdback that we're looking at. We've got some, the purse enrichments with Figure Lakes and some payouts that we're looking at as well. So, you know, I think we're still in, we're gonna be okay for the end of the year. It's just, what happens in the last quarter is going to be a big piece of the pie. I also just want to bring everybody's attention to the last page, which is the accounts receivable aging. Last meeting in June, we had a discussion on the Catskill OCB. We've passed a couple of letters back and forth regarding demand for payment. They have paid the first quarter, the January through March. Was paid on July 28th. That's the $60,665. They still owe for the second quarter. Not sure we're gonna get to see that. Capital has continued to pay on a monthly basis. We have sent some correspondence asking them to do that quarterly after the 3 months. But we received on August 4th a payment for the $46,000, which is the 60 to 90 days in the column. So, at this point, everybody was within the 90 days, but we've got to look very closely at Catskill and Capital OPBs to make sure that they continue to pay on a timely basis.
What are we able to do to encourage such better behavior? Kyle?
Well, we've had some correspondence back and forth, and their position is that, you know, they just don't have it. So we just continue to, you know, stay on top of it. And at this point, there's nothing to do because they're sort of hanging in there. But, you know, long term, there's concerns about whether or not they're going to be able to continue to do that.
We would have to look at that on a budget standpoint as well. I mean, if it looks like they're going to stop payment or not making payments, maybe an allowance against that receivable. We've run into some troubles in the past with the New York City OTB filing bankruptcy, and I think Suffolk at one time. So we don't want to make sure we're not spending money that we're not confident that we're going to have.
And there's some potential legislation pending which would allow them more flexibility on using certain money that they have, but they're not allowed to tap into it. And they had wanted the Thoroughbred Fund to sort of sign on to support this legislation, and we had to write back to them and say, we're just not in a position to do that, you know, as a public benefit corporation. So that was Catskill OTB that was wanting us to sign on to support that. And we just told them a week or two ago that we told them we just couldn't do that as a public benefit corporation. So I think that they're sort of blaming us in some odd way that we're not
The last letter was a little oddly worded.
Yeah, as if we are the ones who are sort of advocating their inflexible sort of structure that they have to operate under. And I don't know enough about sort of the wisdom of the legislation that they are proposing.
I could comment on the little bit that I know if you think tomorrow. I believe they had a bill which would allow them to use capital funds for operating, and I believe they have a very large capital balance, you know, millions and millions upon dollars that have to sit in their capital account that they're looking to actually use for operation. So I believe that's what they're, that's the legislation
they are talking about.
There's a second bill that actually passed the Senate this past session, where it would increase the ADW tax for an in-state residents with out-of-state accounts like TBG, for example. It would go from 5% to 7.5%, of which OTB's and this fund would get 2.5% more in revenue from those plans. So they were involved with that as well. Those are the two pieces of OTB. I'm assuming that they're talking about.
I think they were really asking us to sign on to support the former.
Is that something you're helping them with, Jeff?
They have not engaged us too, but I could certainly talk to them about that, because if that's going to help the entire industry out, it might make sense to be involved with that. So
would that be something we might let them know about, that the Breeders Association would be willing to help them?
I don't know that we need to have a role in that. You know,
we don't lobby, but the Breeders Association would be available. Please contact Jeff.
We can do that.
If you want to provide him with my contact,
that's
simple.
Okay, Trish?
Absolutely.
Is it just Catskill, or are they all working together in the same issue?
I think it's all. Okay. I believe. But I believe Catskill is the largest.
They've got the largest capital fund.
And I think on one of the letters that Catskill sent, they also mentioned capital, OTB. I think that was mentioned.
They're together, I believe. So, yes, if you want to provide them, that'd be...
To the extent they can get help and then be able to pay their bills, that's going to help us all, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions for Jill about the 2017 statement?
And I believe the Resorts World has added.
Well, if they've added maybe 100 machines, 100 machines. It's kind of been going back and forth the last couple of weeks. So, you know, it hasn't really, I don't think that it's really done anything yet for us. The average net win per machine is still basically pretty low.
Right.
but it might have contributed in the fact that in July we didn't have a big fluctuation in the revenue. I think Resorts World was down about 25,000, but Finger Lakes, because we had budgeted such a large decrease for them, they actually exceeded our expectations. So the two kind of washed each other out.
I would maybe ask Joan to just add, for people who might be listening to this online when we post it and may not have the financials in front of them, when you talk about a deficit, explain what we're talking about. We're not actually, you know, in the pits. It's to budget.
It's to budget, correct.
And you say in July we had a good month. We had a month of a lot of winners. Apparently our awards were unusually high for the...
Yes, yeah. And some of that is due to just the timing of when we set up our budget. When we did the budget last year for 2017, back in 2016, we were using budgeted numbers for 16 and 17. So some of those numbers are a little bit are off because we had to go for something that was information that was 2 years old at that time when we're developing our budget. The good news, I think, is if you look year to date, at least through the end of June, we're the total for the three types of awards, breeders, stallions, and owners, are only $22,000 off of what we had budgeted for the first 6 months. So even though we have a bad month, next month might be the opposite, and in the grand scheme of things, it kind of levels and works itself out. So
it's absolutely unpredictable.
Yeah.
I was hoping we were improving as a breed, which could be partially the part.
And if you look at our year to date, we are $57,000 over what we had paid last year. So we are paying more in awards dollar amount compared to last year, and that's with less racing days. If you look at like Finger Lakes with some of the decreases in their racing days. Any other questions?
Okay, if no other questions, we'll move on to item four, consideration of the 2018 budget proposal recommended by the audit committee. Jill?
Okay. So the audit committee got together in, I think it was early July, to discuss the budget for 2018. And as we just kind of alluded to, at certain points we're still haven't been done with 2017, so some of this is information, 6 months of it is on older information. The first page of the budget proposal is a summary. Page two is our revenue detail. Three through five shows you different awards. It's like a five-year trend. We have page six with admin detail, page seven with promo. And the most important page on this, I feel, and I think the audit committee did as well, this is where we spent the majority of our time, is on page two, which is our revenues, because they kind of drive everything else. We needed to get a good feel for where we felt our revenues were going to be in 2018. So if we go to page two, we'll see actual for 13, 14, 15, 16. Actual budget year to date for 17 and the budget for 18. The ADW is, we expect a slight increase, so we put that in there. That's about almost 5%. We're anticipating it to be closer to 5%. Right now it looks like it's more like 4% of our revenues. Breakage and handle, the trend is basically for a decrease every year, and we've budgeted that in for 2018. The VLTs for Resorts World, this is where we really, because it's 57-58% of our budget, this is where we really looked the hardest. There were several proposals that was discussed with the audit committee. One of those was to do like a guaranteed minimum amount, which is the 2013 revenues that we have adjusted for the CPI. So we use that as our beginning number. Right now, even looking at it right now for 2017, we're still exceeding that 2013 adjusted number. Then we took a 2000, and then we took that number, 2017 budgeted number for the amount of machines, and we added the additional, I think it was 500 machines that we're anticipating and getting. And then we looked at a really optimistic, rosy picture where the net win per machine also went up in addition to the additional machines. And we pretty much decided to go with the second option. We're really pretty confident in the communications with the Gaming Commission that we are going to have those extra machines, those 460 machines in play. We're just not quite sure how big of producers they're going to be. And because we've already exceeded the 2013 limit adjusted, so we knew that was a little bit low. So we went with that middle figure. If you look at the VLT, that equates to $11,214,000. It's about a 10% decrease from 2016, but it's about a 4% increase from where we are in 2017 between actual and budgeted. It's only about a $500,000 difference from using the first option and the second option that we used. The Finger Lakes VLT we increased because we had originally budgeted for 2017 a 30% decrease. It's actually more like a 15% decrease, so we increased our expectations for 2018 on that. So what we've got for budgeted revenue for 2018 is the $19,665, and from there we went and filled in what we thought awards were going to be. We took 6% for the promo, and we kind of took actual trends for the admin piece. And then we've got for the Zweig, the 2%, and the Person Enrichment, kind of what we had discussed before. And we ended up with a zero budget for 2018 that we hope is very conservative. And we're hoping that the resorts world does bounce back and then, you know, we've got the revenues.
Jill, I want to comment. Jill did a very, very good job.
Yes, really.
Thank you very much. You really to be commended. This is an excellent work by Jill and Tracy and the audit committee. Thank you very much. Great, great, great job. Okay, do we need a motion to approve? John Graziano moves to approve the 2018 budget proposal.
Second.
Second by Senator Nolan. Any discussion, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The 2018 budget is approved. Again, really good work here.
Thank you.
Number five, promotional update and consideration of exercising second year option of NYTV contract. Jeff?
Thank you. The next packet in your paper stack. I have a promotional report from our contract for this year, which is essentially January to July, and then they walk us through all the line items of our performance of the contract, and if you have any questions, please ask. We published our Stallion Register way back in the beginning of the year, which we laid out all the stallions here in the state of New York, distributed to over 22,000 people across the country, included all the key data and information and statistical analysis that was done by the Jockey Club and the Blood Horse. In addition, we also publish an online register which has a plethora of different analytics and lists and data and hypomania and all the information that breeders are looking to have when looking at stallions. In addition to that, we actually added something to this register, which was a farm directory. I think that people found very useful, and it hadn't been in print before. Again, that was done at the beginning of the year. The second major piece of the contract is our magazine, which is our monthly magazine, The New York Breeder, which is, of course, promoting breeders in ownership here at the state of New York. We've done 7 issues thus far, January through July. They're both in print and electronic format online. On select monthly over 22,000 people, which is the largest distribution that's done for any regional program. The publication has gotten a national presence, and we're really delivering it to everyone across the country who has an interest in breeding and owning in the state of New York. It's been a very, very big success. I think it's probably one of the best promotional tools that we have here in New York State. Again, that was, there's been 7 issues every month this year. The second page of this is a digital presence from our agreement, and we do a weekly Friday electronic newsletter that is kind of like the bulletin of the week's related topics. I can tell you that this, I like to throw this number out, it started with about 40 emails several years ago. There's 6,000 people that receive this every week, which says a lot about, and these are self subscribe people that are receiving it. So they've actually signed up themselves to be a part of it. It's a huge tool, communication tool that we're using every week. In addition to that, we've boosted our social media presence, which has grown at the same rate as well. We have over 1,700 people that follow us on Facebook, and another 1,850 people, I just looked, that are following our Twitter account, which if you looked at industry-related accounts, those are significant given our niche little business that we do here in New York. So we're growing socially, obviously, in these platforms that are relevant to today's world. Website, biggest part of what we do. It's the promotional tool for our industry here. And as I've said many years now, and where this has grown, we offer everything and then some online. Between breeding, racing, sales, and industry news that is written by a full-time staff member. The Twitter feeds, we have entries and results for every New York breeder nationally across the country that we provide for free. Results for every New York bred that races in this country for free. Video replays of all the New York bred winners, photos, win photos, stakes victories, the stallion registry, again, sire lists and stats. Sales related content, different tools for breeding such as Mirror Match. It's really a one-stop shop for breeding here in the state of New York and ownership. Page 3 is the events related to the agreement. Our divisional awards event is of course our marquee event that we do every year where we award the best of the best in New York breeds, voted on by the New York Turf Riders and various participants in New York. It was held in April, sold out crowd, which got to every year, which is a good thing. Here in Saratoga, Richard McGill has been our host and MC for the last several years and does a great job. But as somebody who were there, I think it was probably one of the better events we've had in many years.
You got him signed up for next year yet?
Oh yeah.
Good.
Yeah, he ironically asked me last night. So, he's now no longer with Naira, which is why
that's why I asked.
Showcase days, we had Big Apple Showcase Day, which was on May 29th, Memorial Day, and then the Saratoga Showcase Day, which is about to happen in a few weeks from on the 25th, where we've reserved the paddock tent, which is pretty neat because it's right outside of the paddock that everyone likes to attend and be a part of the races that day. So that's about to occur, and then actually in October there'll be the fall showcase day as well. And then this weekend is the preferred sales party. We have our marquee sales here. Basic tips are going to occur on both nights, Saturday and Sunday. We have a private event for all those who like to attend, where they have an open bar of food throughout the entire evening, which is kind of nice for people who want to come in and out and partake in the sale. Page 4, the active care component that we're involved with is the Take 2 program that's going on now for several years. I will tell you that this is for where we're distributing prize money for thoroughbred only classes at 100 jumper shows. This started with being just little old Saratoga, a few different shows. This is a national program now where it's being done in every state. And it's certainly something to be proud of that the fund is contributing towards. We do have our booth outside of the paddock in Saratoga where we're distributing all these materials that we're talking about that I can't even keep stocked, which is a good problem because people are taking a lot of brochures and whatnot showing interest in the program. In the fall, we have the National Owners Conference that is put on by OwnerView, which is a partnership between Jockey Club and TOBA, where invested and new owners take part in a 3-day conference and seminar. There's a sponsor of that where we get to promote the New York program at that event, which is very important. And then the last piece is the small piece of advertising that we're involved with, where we're doing the micro-level ads with TGN related to specific winners on a bi-weekly or weekly basis, twice a week. It's going out to their entire rotation. There's been over 500,000 views such that they told us from those actual rotations that we're a part of. And that is in a very quick summary update on all the pieces that we've been involved with under our agreement for this year.
Very impressive. Thank you, Jeff. Any questions for Jeff about this update?
I think there's questions of TDN always and their what they're promising and their, what they say they're providing to what they actually are doing. It would be hard to believe that 11,000 subscribers were 35,000 views.
They're probably counting every one of them off of that.
but this way, it's not possible.
Right.
I mean, I have a website company, and if we had all that kind of ratio, I would be Bill Gates.
When you sign and register, it is that free of charge?
Yes. Correct.
On the farm listings now that you put it, how's that going?
We actually worked with Tracy to get the complete list of every farm that has been partaking in the breeding program, so everyone was listed in that.
Do we want to upgrade that to maybe give people a chance to buy a page and showcase their farm and all the aspects about it, showing them off to people? Because I think a lot of people, if they saw a lot of pictures of beautiful New York farms, they would build their confidence in having their horses on them and give them.
Well, we don't. Actually, Jeff publishes the Stallion Register.
We could do that.
Yeah.
We could certainly do that.
What we've done is we have a YouTube channel. People can look up a stallion and the introduction of every stallion, you see the farm. So that I think we're dispelling a lot of negative thoughts about what New York farms are like when people see how beautiful they actually are. We have aerial footage of the farms, which really makes them.
But again, we are distributing 23,000 New York stallion registered, you know, and that is a great, another alternative to show off our land, the properties that are that we are supporting. And would help people want to put their horses on those properties and increase the revenue for our participating farms.
Maybe in the Stallion Register too, we can tell people where to come to see that stallion in a walking video.
Right. But these days in marketing, you want to give them all the chances. You want to keep dragging them to the websites only. If they're looking in the Stallion Registry for a stallion, they could look at beautiful pictures of farms. It's a terrific way to promote our farms.
And there's a catch-22 to that too, where there are some properties that we need to be, I think, understand. We need to, it's certainly something we can look at. We started with zero, we're at a halfway, we can go full gauge.
The discrimination factor that we used was if someone didn't believe in their stallion enough to pay for it to be in the Stallion Register, we did not take the time to go shoot a walking video and aerial footage of the farms.
Which is the same kind.
So basically, the better stallions.
Yeah. It will be pursued.
Good. Thank you, Jeff. Good idea, Phil.
John? Do we need a motion to exercise the second year?
Yes, we do. Thank you very much, John. Take a motion to exercise the second year option. Motion by Member Birch. Second, John Graziano. Any discussion? Any questions for Jeff?
I will recuse myself from this.
You got that, Carl? All in favor?
Aye.
The option is exercised. Number six, update on racing at Finger Lakes Gaming and Racetrack. Tracy?
The question came up at the last board meeting. We have a term sheet agreement with the Finger Lakes on what they're supposed to do with our money. So basically, the Finger Lakes shares with us how they're using fund money and in what races. So when Jill gets that information, she puts it into charts so that you can now take a look and see how that money is being used. In other words, it's a quick way to look at how your money is being used by Finger Lakes. And then Jeff will follow up because he's got more of an in-depth look at what's happening with the open races there too. So you have a full look at what the product is doing out in the Finger Lakes.
So to just summarize what I put together, it's actually, I think, the last document that's there. It's two pages. Yes. The first page is kind of an overview as far as what is budgeted for 2017 versus 2016. So you'll see in 2017, based on, does everybody have it?
It's at the bottom of your packets, apparently.
2017, with the additional supplemental that was paid out for 2016, the full purse enrichment budget for 2017, we're paying, the budget for Finger Lakes for 2017 is $2,374,000. That versus the $1,029,000 in 16. So there's about 131% increase in the fund's contribution to the purchases this year, change of about $1.3 million. And then if you look at underneath that budgeted amount, we're showing as of the end of July, July 31st, where the fund's money has gone. So you'll see here there were 26 allowance one time for a total fund contribution of $249,600 versus last year about the same number of races but a lower percentage of the fund money. I think the two pieces that everybody is interested in this year is the maiden special weight and then the stallion New York sire. So the maiden special weight, you'll see the fund has put in $230,000 this year for 20 races. Versus, this is a little deceiving, the $96,000 for 33 races. The reason for that is this year the fund's money is just being put in restricted races, whereas last year there were open company races where there was an add-on if it was a New York bred horse. We paid out $154,000 in the New York Sired Stallion Awards, 22 of them. There's a breakdown underneath that kind of shows you where that's happened. So of the main special weight races, 20 of them were restricted, 16 were open. We paid out New York Sired Awards in 14 of the restricted, 8 of the open company for a total 22 paid out of 36 races. It's 61%. If we wanted to look, the Finger Lakes, when we put together the sheet, we budgeted $273,000 for this New York Sired program. So as of this year, we've paid out about 61% of that. If we compare it to all of 2016, where there were 38 New York Sired, it was 64% of the total maiden special weight races. So just kind of let you know that we're kind of on budget for where it looks to me like that we're going to have enough money to pay off these awards through the rest of the season. I think that's about all that page says. The next page kind of shows the actual race detail. So it shows 2017 restricted open company total. We've got another section over to the right for the 2016, and then the bottom section shows the change from one year to the next. What does it tell us? I think in summary, it tells us that Finger Lakes racing in 2017 has decreased, but the number of restricted races has actually increased. There's been a slight field size increase, very, very slight, on both types of races. And if you look on the bottom where you see the changes, most of the decreases in the Finger Lakes racing has come in the three claiming categories, the claiming, maiden claiming, and the starter optional claiming. They've actually dropped about 102 races in those three categories together. So they've added some in some other areas. So, in those 102 races, the average purse was about $10,300. So they're the lower purse races as well. That's kind of what I put together in numbers. I don't know if anybody has any questions, or maybe Jeff can talk a little bit more about the program in general, the whole Finger Lakes program.
Okay. So I spent too much time on this topic. since January through, I guess it's been quiet now for the last few months, but as you know, this organization is the main reason that Finger Lakes is operating to their calendar as they have in the past few years due to what this board has decided to do with our personal original money fund, with the sum of around $2 million, I believe, for this year and next year. So as part of that term sheet that we entered with them, Finger Lakes Delaware North was set to do certain things. And I can tell you, in terms of my involvement, it's been a little quiet on some of those topics. For example, the turf course that was a part of one of this board's requests too, we'll look into that. I haven't heard anything whatsoever on what they're actually doing, Delaware North.
I can add to that. I know that he asked, or Chris Regal of Delaware North, asked the same company that had given him an estimate a few years ago, I'm thinking it must be 6 or 7 years ago now, to come back and give him an updated estimate.
Right, which was in June. It was a June correspondence when that happened. It's
I know. The week before last, he told me he was going to have it last week. I think he might be out of the office because I've not gotten any responses in the past week.
So we're waiting to hear what they're doing with that. There was a meeting that was held where we went to Finger Lakes.
Is that June?
Well, I got May 10th on that. Okay. So we'll call it May 10th.
Okay.
I was working with Rob Williams from the Gaming Commission at the governor's office, and he asked me if I could help put together some materials for a meeting that we were going to hold at Finger Lakes in May. And at the time, we were talking about how Delaware North and all the groups could potentially hire consultants to look at the feasibility of doing a turf course at the track, which in return will hopefully change the business model and increase all the things we need to have increased. So I essentially said, I'm going to do as much as I can, and we're going to go to the meeting prepared in a fashion that hopefully spark this dialogue a little bit quicker. So what you're looking at, what you have here in this packet, is a study that was done by myself through NYTV, where I actually, certainly not going to walk us through all this, but if you have time, I highly encourage you to give it a once over. I did a study of all of turf racing across the country, and then I looked at specific tracks that are similar to Finger Lakes that have installed turf courses, and I compared some of the metrics that are important to our industry, like field size and handling. And what was demonstrated through, and I presented this at this meeting in May at Finger Lakes. And the takeaway from this is that Finger Lakes' business model is literally at the bottom of the barrel in terms of national racing for field size and for handle, which is really what drives their economy and economics of being able to run racing. And rather than just being in theory talking about these things, I proved that via the numbers here. So I think it was a big takeaway for them. And I was able to show what, for every race that converted to turf down the road, projection-wise, could have a dramatic effect on their bottom line, which would be positive net win for everyone involved. Out of that meeting, it's this is kind of gotten where we're going, is there's not much that has happened, other than Chris Regal at Delaware North in June said that he was looking into a company again to get a quote on what it would cost infrastructure-wise to go build this course.
So they haven't done a feasibility, what, there wasn't a feasibility?
No, I think that kind of took...
You did it.
I kind of did it, is really what it came down to. And then they were going to take this along with whatever the consultant they're going to work with to give a cost breakdown of, okay, this is logistically what it would be to go do this.
For what it's worth, this is well done.
Thank you. Thank you. So I think it was well received. I think I know that the state has taken this and is looking at it.
Yeah, I added it to the agenda at the last Gaming Commission meeting, and we discussed it as new business. I told them we were able to, through everybody's help, put together a two-year solution, but that's going to expire and may even expire sooner than 2 years, depending on our financial situation here. And they took it seriously. I said, we have to come up with a solution. I suggested that they have some discussions with NYRA about it, as you and I talked, Jeff. And they certainly were receptive, and they realized that it's an issue that the entire Gaming Commission has to focus on because of the importance of Finger Lakes to this industry and that whole area, really.
Right.
So I think if we wait to the end of the 2 years, we're just going to have our head against the wall again. So it's better if we start now, and I think this is really going to be helpful. And I'm going to keep pushing. I'm going to raise it at every meeting and keep pushing Williams and the other people at the Gaming Commission to view it as a significant item on things we have to get done.
I think that's extremely helpful, and I think it'll go a long way. And that's the only reason we've had those dialogues was because of the work you did with the Gaming Commission to spark them.
Good.
And I think this board, the takeaway is that we just need to be aware that I don't think any changes have really been made so far there, and we're already halfway through the first year of this agreement, and we should be very cautious of where this end of the year would lead, where if maybe no changes were to take place on top of our revenue concerns. It's something I think is probably one of the most important things to watch alongside of Resorts World.
So Jeff, I was just curious, you said that the purse is doing really well, but it doesn't attract can you just kind of share why that's the case?
Their purses are not very, very well.
Is this one phrase by their purses?
Where are you reading this?
Page 6. I'm just glancing this down. Bottom page 6.
This was a 10-year view, that's why.
Oh.
Their purses are up 50% over 10 years.
10 years.
However,
retro.
However, that hasn't translated in their business model in terms of the handle and field size going up alongside of that. So I took a 10-year snapshot at where Finger Lakes was.
Historically,
yeah. So, but if you collectively you looked at Finger Lakes in contrast with the rest of the country, the purses are really at the bottom. Which is part of the problem. Finger Lakes' problem, I can summarize this very quickly. Finger Lakes' problem is horses, as simple as that sounds. They don't have enough horses to accommodate the amount of days that they raise, such that their field size is literally at the bottom. And based on numbers and statistics and studies, the shorter the fields that you run, the less money is wagered. The less money that's wagered means less money that comes back to the purse account. It's money that goes to the breeding fund, to the Gaming Commission, to everyone. So we want more horses there so that their races have more field size, so more people wager and everybody wins. And again, they just haven't made any changes to racing day. Nothing has really changed is the problem. But we need to get more horses there in the races, whether that's a reduced meet or there's a lot of different ways that they could do this.
And then turf is a major.
And turf is a major component of that because it's proven turf races yield larger fields, which is why the handle is significantly larger, upwards of 20% in contrast to a same dirt race, depending on where.
Okay.
where the track is. So it's really about, we need more horses there, which is, Commissioner mentioned the topics about getting NARA involved in the dialogue, because there's a, there's a similarity, obviously, between, B level racing, and you draw from one, and you draw from, you share horses, basically. So, and that hasn't happened, ever, so we're hoping that can, in some fashion.
Well, there is a problem, which is, there is a shortage of horses that stems from the recession that we had years back, and the number of horses are still, hasn't recovered to a level that, it would be an excellent way to cooperate if NARA did not run certain races, and left that level of racing to Federlands, because they should be running 12-5 claiming races at NARA. They should be running the top tier races, and Finger Lakes should have that market if it were cooperative and worked the way we envisioned it.
Well, NARA's been reconstituted, as you all know. The Gaming Commission is now fully appointed. The governor appointed Robert Megna, former budget director, and Jerry Skernick at the recommendation of the assembly. So we got a full staff, and Jackie's good friend Barry Sample has been appointed chairman. So we have a chair and a full complement of members. So I think that we have a good group now, and they're all interested in the Finger Lakes issue, and I think it's a good opportunity to get something done.
Yeah, it's a very complicated problem. You know, there's not one. As I put, I might say a silver bullet, there's a lot of pieces that.
So we got it into my mind, the funding for the hospital course, was that accommodated for in the discussion, or was really just they, or this is coming at Finger Lakes to figure out how they're going to fund
yes.
what they need to do. Is that kind of their hide as to how they would fund construction of the turf course?
That's part of it. And we haven't, and that's why we haven't gotten that far. Is we're trying to say, okay, well, it's going to cost X, making a number up, $3 or $4 million. How is this going to go get funded?
Okay.
Now, and that's where Rob and the game or the governor's office could be very helpful too, is that, there are resources out there within the state for economic development and whatnot in Western New York, and Delaware North is going to have to play a huge part in all that too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can't just do another 2-year bailout. It's just not going to happen.
No.
No, absolutely not. Finger Lakes in a nutshell, where we are today.
Thanks. Great job, Jeff. Thank you. I guess Joe got delayed. So Tracy will step in for Joe on number 7 on the aftercare issue.
Well, as you know, Joe McMahon has been somewhat concerned that in our public profile, we don't seem to be doing very much for aftercare. We had attempted to take registration fees and assign them to aftercare facilities in New York that were approved by the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, but the attorneys at the Gaming Commission, their opinion was that does not fit with statute. So in the meantime, through the promotion committee every year, we support Thoroughbred Aftercare facilities in New York State through their sponsoring events, and we get exposure to their people in their circle of influence. I think more and more people are realizing that not just the safety of thoroughbreds at the track is of a concern to the public, but they want to know, even before they buy, what's going to happen to that horse when its career is over. I came up to shoot a video a couple weeks ago here at this museum. They were having, I think they had 7 or 8 partnership groups trying to promote the idea that 100% of the thrill of racehorse ownership at a fraction of the cost. And I spoke to people who were considering becoming a fractional owner, and they were going around and asking each one of the partnerships, not just what kind of horses, what kind of payments, but first of all, what is your plan for taking care of this horse when its racing days are done? So the public, we have a lot of transparency such that they see immediately if a horse goes down. But they also want to know that the people, especially since thoroughbred owners are perceived as being well-heeled, that they care about the horse and that they're going to take care of it afterwards. So someone who, I don't think I'll mention his name at the meeting, but Joe said he ran into this fellow and the fellow said, oh, don't worry about aftercare, I've got it covered. And so Joe was like, what does that mean? So I called Rob Williams. I said, do you know what that means? And he said, no, I don't know what the fellow's talking about. So I think Joe was thinking in terms of, you know, maybe we need to make some kind of a public statement or have a mission statement from the fund about how we support aftercare and encourage others to bear responsibility. I mean, the fund doesn't have the means to support every horse after racing, but everyone who owns a horse should take into consideration, how am I going to support that horse afterwards, or how am I going to retrain it, or find a place where it can be retrained, and very importantly, try and retire that horse when it's sound so it can have a second career. Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, that's, you know, kind of how they got in problems, because they would take all the horses that couldn't find another career because they weren't sound enough. So there's so many layers to this, a very deep subject, but Joe's feeling is that the fund needs to have the public perceive that we do care about the horses and aftercare and are doing something about it.
Well, in the past, as I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, there was a legal issue as to the fund's authority to actually directly support aftercare. And there was a little bit of a difference of opinion, right, Carl?
That's correct.
With you and the Gaming Commission?
Yep.
I brought it up again with the Gaming Commission people, and they've softened their stance. They're not going to object. So if Kyle were to tell us that it's authorized from his perspective, his reading of our enabling statute, it's something that I think we can pursue. I feel confident that, you know, we could go that way. What that means budgetarily, you know, that's for another meeting. But I think that's a good way of showing our support.
Yes.
It's a very good way.
Yeah.
I mean,
even if it's not a huge number,
right, yeah.
It's still.
But it would be something that's consistent and ongoing.
Right.
And also with that message that, you know, individuals need to bear some responsibility as well. It's not. The state can't support every horse, but everyone should have that mindset of support for the horse.
Yeah. What we, just to refresh everyone's minds around what we talked about, it's been a couple of years.
It's been 2 years.
So maybe you refresh me if I get this wrong. The thought process a few years ago was that a way of getting everyone attached to being responsible for the horses that they're bringing into the world and how the fund can play a part of it is through the registration process. So the fund collects registrations from every breeder in the state. And it's in the tune of, I'm estimating, so this is $150,000 to $200,000 a year. And the thought process was for the Wallapa Fund to utilize that, some of that or a portion of that or all of that resources to go to this aftercare. And that was like the principle.
There were two concepts. One was using registration revenue, which is arguably not regulated by the specific provisions of the racing law, because it arguably exists outside of the strictures of the statute. And that was one branch that I opined on 2 years ago as a form of revenue that could be used for that purpose.
Right.
And then secondarily, I was asked whether or not under the promotion branch, you know, whether or not we could use, we could support, the fund could support aftercare under the promotion budget, under the theory that, you know, obviously the statute speaks in terms of raising thoroughbred horses and you know using fund assets to promote the, I forget the exact language of the statute, but to promote and advance the breeding and raising of thoroughbred horses, and we took the position that that aftercare is part of the raising of the thoroughbred horse, theoretically. And so under either of those branches, we had said that there's a basis to do this. And then that sort of, there were some contrary views from gaming, and we didn't go anywhere after that. So my position hasn't changed.
We could relook at some materials we did.
Yeah, I'd suggest that we have a an ad hoc aftercare committee to put something together for our next meeting. That okay? Mm-hmm. Who would like to work with Kyle? Jeff?
Sure.
Dr. Wilmot? Anyone else? And Senator Nolan.
And since Joe's not here, he should be on the committee too.
Joe is drafted to be on the committee, but he has a right to decline.
So this is not the military.
It's not the military. And if you could put together something that could be on the next meeting in December, right?
Yeah.
So you have plenty.
I think that's fantastic because enough worrying about it and thinking about it, but just for the public to be able to know we're taking some positive, concrete steps towards that.
Excellent.
Can we, Jeff, take a moment to just discuss this terrific exhibit that he has given to all of us?
Sure.
Also, before we do that, on that issue of aftercare, can I just bug in there for the committee and just consider New York Farm impact on that? Consideration that there's only so much money a pot. We really should be making sure that that's targeted to people that are considering keeping their horse, that the horse would be in New York and cared for in New York.
Could you work with this ad hoc committee, Jack?
I would like to.
But just as a consultant advisor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, of course, Jackie, when the horses are retired in New York, they continue to, eat hay and grain and get the services of a blacksmith and the veterinarians.
Yeah. Good one. There was one more handout in there that I wanted you to all have. It's this colorful one, the charts. Not around the top of it. This is a result of some of the legwork for the Finger Lakes, where I was privy to national handle numbers and field size numbers. So there's been a long-standing view that the New York bred horses equate to more field size or greater field size and more handle than not. And that's been a long-standing position that all the New York breeders and owners always taken. However, it's never really been proven via real live numbers. Well, I've done that for us here. And I think it's pretty important because I've taken this and I've given it to the NIRA board, which I now sit on, and I wanted them to be aware of some of these facts. And what, just quickly to show you, tell you what is the takeaway of this. Left side on the page is the average field size of race. The right side is the average handle per race. Color-coded by tracks at NIRA. Blue, Aqueduct, red, Saratoga, green, Belmont. And then beneath them, those are the actual numbers. And the black is the percentage of the New York red is larger than the open side. So for example, at Aqueduct, the New York bred races had a 7.3% greater field size than their contrasting open races. At Saratoga, it's 10.6% larger than the open races at Saratoga. And at Belmont, it's 16% larger than the open race contrasting races at Belmont Park. If you flip that to the right side, it kind of corresponds, as we know, field size creates more handle. 7.4%, 9.9, and 9.9 at Belmont. So basically, the takeaway of this is that the New York bred races, for everyone that NIRA runs, it's roughly about a 10% increase in terms of the amount of handle and field size that goes back to NIRA and whatnot, meaning our races are of great value to NIRA. The page 2 and 3, I just broke it down a further level. This is dirt. Page 3 is turf. That's all that is, by track, same thing. Page 1 is overall.
How many New York races are run?
There's 800 roughly 800 across the state, of which a little over 600 are NAERA.
And if they're averaging 100,000, if they're averaging this much more money per race, we're providing them with, you say, $80 million more in handle than the regular. This is a stunning proof of the importance of the work we're doing and how NAERA has got to start to get on board and realize we are the heartbeat of their business.
48%, think about this, 48% of NAERA's starts last year, last calendar year, were New York Brothers. Which half of their starts.
That's $100,000 on average extra per race. That's $80 million.
Would this be representative if you went back 15, 14, 13?
I don't think so. I think that this is taking a change for sure. As our program is
trending up.
As this
fund, yeah, we've produced better
horses. It's
because
of the numbers? It's just because of no other reason other than the numbers.
Don't you think it's also because we breed better horses now than we did 15 years ago?
That's what I was thinking.
I think it's a combination of
everything.
We have more foals, so our presence is larger than ours. They use more of our races because of that, because we have larger fields. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the quality has certainly changed now that our state reds are running in every Saturday, over the track in graded races. So the combination, it's the success of the program and the fund. And at the same time, the amount of money that NAERA gives in purse is why it's become lucrative to be a New York bred owner and breeder. So our numbers are showing results is really what it comes down to.
They're doing a great job with the TV this year.
Oh, really, unbelievable.
But still,
I've been
watching it down
in
the city and I get hooked.
But still,
I turn it on and I get hooked. I wind up watching the whole race.
But there's still
and I can't
there's
back
a hidden problem. I would like to point out, though, that there still is absolute institutional prejudice by NAERA against our New York Reds, where our races, the open races, which have less handle than our races, are sometimes upwards of $20,000 more in purse structure. And it is a slap in our state's face, because the proof is in right here that our horses are the engine of their success. So we have a lot to talk about with them.
Yep. And I think we have a great opportunity to do it now with Jeff on the board and it being reconstituted. And
question on the 48%, that's not just New York breds in New York bred races. It's New York breds in open races also, right?
Correct. So essentially without the stable horses racing, the NAERA would not be well. So they wouldn't be able to
have. Good job.
This is important to know.
It gets back to the importance, too, of the Finger Lakes racetrack, because I know people down out there, their numbers in terms of breeding are way down because they are being told that their track wasn't going to open. So they have like 200 or 300 empty stalls at the Finger Lakes racetrack. And, we watch the entries and we'll see 7 or 8 entrants, but then there'll be 2 vet scratches and then you're back to a 5-horse field.
Well, we just got to keep pushing them. If we don't, it's just nothing's going
to
happen.
There has to be cooperation. That's what we have to push for. Because we must impose upon NAERA the understanding that there cannot be 12-5 claiming races. And also, we need to make sure that Finger Lakes understands that they have to write races that are different than NAERA, meaning that there are better opportunities for New York breds to find races that they no longer can possibly win at the NAERA tracks. Because as you succeed, the racing gets harder. Now, Finger Lakes must have a condition book that reflects the quality of horses that are running in New York, and therefore we must give them a natural home at Finger Lakes so that we split the population properly, so that the owners and breeders of horses that are somewhat graduated out of their success band have a place they can compete with in Finger Lakes, helping their field size.
Thank you very much. Any other questions on the aftercare? And I don't think we're going to need to do an executive session, Kyle. There's been no real developments in our one legal matter that we discussed, so it's just been adjourned. There were two people that had claims to the same awards, and they're still not resolved, and there's really not been many developments, so I don't think it's worth going into executive session.
I agree with that. There's nothing to report.
Under new business, anybody have any new business? Anybody have any old business? And we'll take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Good meeting.
Good meeting.